Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of the Thursday edition of Point Taken. Steve is off today. He will be back tomorrow. But of course, Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee is here all hour with us. And we just have to start with a hilarious, hilarious development that I was unaware of. So, as most people know, our studio is in the 3rd Street Market Hall in downtown Milwaukee. And we have a new mural outside of our office or our studio and ESPN Milwaukee and 101.7 The Truth. And I did not realize, because it's finally done, and you just pointed this out to me, Jeremy, that Steve's favorite public art is heavily featured in this mural.
It certainly is. It's almost right outside the chair that Steve sits in all the time. And if you want to see this, come to 3rd Street Market Hall. It's right there on what would be the west side of the market hall, away from the Milwaukee River. And it's a beautiful, beautiful drawing of The Calling. Which is what Steve would call the big orange asterisk or sunburst at the eastern end of Wisconsin Avenue.
That he loves so much.
Yes.
I don't know if I ever shared this on the show and had like a talk and text line. Maybe I should get that set up. But I think it was during Summerfest. My husband and I took a picture by The Calling, but like left space in between us. And then I just Photoshopped Steve into it.
And it was really well done. I remember being impressed by it.
Yeah. You're like, is this real? I was like, no, it's not real. So I can't wait for Steve to get pictures of Steve on air with The Calling in the picture. But anyways, that's not what we're going to talk about today. What we're going to talk about today is a variety of things, but we had a running joke as far as HPV before as a play on a sexually transmitted disease, but really talking about parking violations. But now we are actually going to talk about STIs. So yeah. Let's get into it.
There's something bad has happened, at least temporarily, which is that the city has closed its STI clinic, part of the much larger Milwaukee Health Department, at the Keenan Health Center, which is at about 36th and Fond du Lac. It's just north of Fond du Lac Avenue. They operate this center, and it's closed. And obviously, I think if you or I, and we're not in a position in life where we probably ever have this concern, but if we needed to get a STI test, sexually transmitted infection test, we'd probably go to our primary care provider.
Yeah.
But for a large segment of Milwaukee's population, the easiest place to go, and you can just walk in and get same-day results, is the city's Keenan Health Center and this STI clinic. And the city had to close it because they have a shortage of nurses. And we know there's a national shortage of nurses and electricians. Those are two things that are in a shortage nationwide. And those are being reflected in city services because public health nursing and being a public electrician are two of the tougher types of those jobs. So the city has had trouble staffing the center. I'll read a comment from Michael Todoraitis announcing this closure. We remain deeply committed to providing accessible, equitable, sexual and reproductive health care for all residents. We know how important these services are for our community, and this brief pause will allow us to strengthen staffing, maintain clinical quality, and bring the STI clinic back stronger and more sustainable than before. Now, I thought, okay, maybe there's a couple dozen people that are going to be impacted by that. So what I did, because where I've lived for the past month is budget presentations, I pulled up the city's budget presentation or the health department's budget presentation to learn how much are they spending in this area and what comments did they have about nursing. And more than 45,000 tests are administered every year by the health department for STIs.
Wow.
So more than 100 per day. So if we're about to lose an entire month, like that number is going to plummet next year. There were already, as of the end of August this year, there had been more than 39,000 tests administered. I don't know if that means that there's a bumper season of fun in the summer or if that means that things were already trending up and maybe that's part of why nurses have resigned.
But it's also great that people are getting tested.
Yes.
I think that's a great realization.
And one of the things that the health department does as a mandated state role is if there's an outbreak of chlamydia, gonorrhea, any undesirable disease, that they lead the investigation. They try and find patient zero. And they do that more than 2,000 times in 2024. And then through 2025, they've already done it 1,400 times. So that could probably be resulting in a lot of tests that, hey, so-and-so, we think you might be connected to this web. Come get tested and let's rule you out.
So is the next step of them just trying to recruit more nurses? Is that what's contingent on them opening again?
Yes. So that's already underway. If you're interested, if you're qualified to be a registered nurse, city pay starts at $68,000. So we talk about the budget. It's about to go up 4%. And then it peaks at about $87,000. There's recruitment fairs, and this is all in an article under Milwaukee, or if you search for the Milwaukee Health Department online, there's a series of events starting in November, lasting into December, and then they're just hiring on an ongoing basis.
So as far as a backup from that until it's reopened, there's Bested, which is on Brady?
Yeah, the three places the health department sends you to, but Bested on Brady is one that serves the LGBT community particularly. But they said if you want same-day testing, they recommended Milwaukee Health Services, which is on MLK Drive near Center Street, Outreach Community Health Centers, which is on the 200 block of Capitol Drive, and then Progressive Community Health Centers, which has a place on Lisbon Avenue and on North 12th Street near the Aurora Sinai Complex.
All right, there you go. All right, well, surprising number, but like I said, I'm happy people are getting tested, and hopefully they get some nurses and can reopen soon.
Yes. Going back to October when they talked about that, they talked about staffing, the commissioner made a comment, we have to triage where we have nurses, so it seemed like this issue had been festering for a long time.
Got it. All right. Well, when we come back, a beer district, potentially, maybe. We'll see. Jeremy Janine is here from Urban Milwaukee. I am Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken. Everybody wants to be closer to free. Big thanks again to everyone who made it out to our first WTMJ trivia last night at Revere's in Delafield. Great turnout. But if you missed it, you have another chance. Join Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai for WTMJ's Trivia Showdown Wednesday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at Maddie's Bar and Grill in New Berlin. So it's presented by Quizmaster Trivia. It's benefiting Capco's Kids to Kids Toy Drive. So all you need to do is bring an unused toy or text TOY to 855-616-1620 to donate. You can also donate at the event. So yeah, bring your friends, play for a great cause, show everyone how smart you are. And I have to say, Jeremy Janine, last week when we were talking about, we were promoting our trivia night, I asked you how good at trivia you were, and not surprisingly, you said, I am very good, or I'm pretty good, and you referenced James Garfield, and Mike and I started the show, Death by Lightning. It's very good. The Netflix show about James Garfield and the guy who killed him.
So look at that, a television recommendation and a humble brag all in one.
All in one, yeah, there you go. So, are we going to get you to any of these trivia nights?
Where's the next one again? Say
this
it again
one,
for the listeners.
The next one, next Wednesday, Maddie's in New Berlin. Then there's going to be, I forgot the order, but there's going to be one at Left Sentosa. And then there's one in Menominee Falls. I'm missing something. I'll get back.
You can persuade me to come to one of them.
Okay,
embarrass
perfect.
Myself.
Perfect. Great. All right. So there was a new, so part of the, I've been on this for a while because I remember when Robin Palm, bourbon planner, as he's referred to himself on social media, first made this argument as far as what would be available and to build and develop around American Family Field that would be similar to a Deer District as far as having more use of the space because there is so much parking at American Family Field. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the deal with extending how much revenue or how much like tax dollars were going to go to the Brewers and to AmFam Field was that they at least had to do a study to see what would that look like to have more development around there. And the study's finally out.
Yes, we have at least the executive summary of the study. We're still waiting the final draft with the great detail of it. But this company out of Washington, D.C., Braidsford and Dunleavy, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, but they actually did a really robust study. I have to credit them. They looked at everything from like floodplains to how the Interstate 94 project is with the stadium interchange is going to change the alignment of the highway that divides it. So American Family Field, I still want to call it Miller Park all the time, 260 acres of land, about 160 acres of that is parking. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
It's more parking than, is it Disney World or Disneyland?
I don't know.
I forgot. That was one of the things that I know Robin pointed out. It's like there is, or at least for the Magic Kingdom at Disney World, there's like equivalent of that's how much parking we have at AmFam.
That wouldn't surprise me because there's about 12,000 parking spaces outside American Family Field. And if you've ever gone to a Wednesday afternoon game against the Cincinnati Reds, you know that it's not needed for all 81 home games. So this study looked at using just a slice of that land, and they also considered market factors because I think it's really easy to go, okay, well, you could put buildings here, and you could put a 30-story building here. And they said, no, really what you're going to see is like 5 to 7-story buildings. You're going to see predominantly residential buildings, so up to 1,000 units of housing, a small amount of office space, so like 50,000 square feet of office space. You want like a comparison of what that is? That means like two floors of most downtown office buildings. So not a ton of office space. And then 50,000 square feet of retail space, which gets you somewhere about half of Walmart. So again, not a huge spot, but that could mean a grocery store or something. And they drew up, again, this is where I credit them studying the floodplains, really good plans and siting options. So one of the options would take the Menominee River, which is kind of an afterthought. If you park in the far eastern lots, I forget if those are the Yount and the Molitor lots. Anyways, the lots closest to downtown Milwaukee.
Okay, yeah.
You walk across the river and you don't really even know the river's there. It would instead orient buildings around the river on both sides, leaving some parking far away and then preserving all the preferred parking near the stadium. Another option would kind of be a hybrid of that, put some on preferred lots. And then the third option would ring Healthfare Field, which is the former county stadium footprint, with a series of buildings and eliminate a lot of the preferred parking in exchange for incorporating parking garages, which could have shared uses. So you might live there, but you also might share it with season ticket holders with preferred parking. The net loss after adding some parking garages and removing surface parking in all the scenarios was something like 800 to 1,000 parking spaces.
Which out of 12,000 is not that much.
Yeah, you probably feel that on like playoff games and all that. You'd be like, well, I wish we had a little bit more parking, and maybe you could temporarily convert gravel lots or more of Canal Street or something. But on most days, I would think, yeah, you wouldn't notice it. The Brewers have yet to actually comment on this plan because they only have the executive summary, not the full plan.
Mm-hmm. Remind me as far as the original or initial kind of feelings that the Brewers have expressed even before, I mean, way back when, as far as their desire to develop on that land.
If you go back to the 90s when the stadium was developed, there was actually a fight about this land with another company that didn't want the stadium. They owned the kind of the lingering assets of the defunct Milwaukee Road, and they wanted some entertainment retail complex. So the end stadium agreement prohibited actually the Brewers from developing any of the land. And part of that is it gets complicated because it's tax exempt land, and how would you deal with that tax exemption? The report actually addresses that. But for decades now, we had essentially a moratorium on any development there. Even if the Brewers wanted it, they couldn't pursue it. I think it's also easy to see that, okay, they make money from parking. They actually get that money. It's not a big asset to maintain, so they're probably content doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing Chicago, Atlanta, San Francisco, all these stadiums are now getting lots of development around them. Looking locally, the Green Bay Packers and the Milwaukee Bucks all benefit from ancillary revenue. I think the tide is probably turning, that the Brewers are seeing that's a revenue opportunity that maybe wasn't there in the early 2000s.
Got it. All right. Well, I missed this conversation. I know Steve and Tracy talked about it a little bit yesterday, but as far as a new study that came out as far as everyone's favorite thing to fight about, what to do with 794.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the streetcar.
It was a street. I don't know. What do you think people like to fight about more, the streetcar or 794?
Whatever's in front of them on Facebook.
Mm. I don't know. All right. You tell us, what do you like to fight about more, 794 or the hop? 855-616-1620. We'll talk about that with Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee after this. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve will be back tomorrow. We're talking to Jeremy Janine. And so there was different, there's different reports, right, as far as 794. There's conflating reports? How would you describe it?
I don't know that any of them conflict with one another. I just question, and this is what we're going to talk about, the methodology. So Tracy Johnson, who leads Commercial Association of Realtors Wisconsin, CARW, she's also a fill-in host on WTMJ.
She was here yesterday.
Yeah.
I missed her.
And so check out Point Taken from yesterday to listen to Tracy talk with Steve about their report and why they did it.
It was their report that they commissioned?
Yes, CARW commissioned this report. The reason why is very good. They're like, they want kind of ideas about the impact of replacing 794 with the boulevard, with slimming it down, or just rebuilding it exactly as is. They commissioned this report, and we'll talk about it in a minute. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation has traffic models now, so we can actually get some estimate of what they think the impacts will be of the different models, of the different replacement options. And then this group called Rethink 94, a year ago actually, came up with a plan of, well, okay, if this acreage opened up over 30 years, we think this development would occur, and then roughly this amount of property tax revenue would accrue to the city in sales tax revenue.
And so what is your issue with this pseudoscience, as you called it?
Well, I think all reports are, yes. In my comments I send to you and Steve and Jaslyn before every show, I noted that we should probably talk about the pseudoscience of, I want anyone that they see a report like this, and this has an eye-popping number, the Rethink 794 and an eye-popping number, think about how they generated that number. And in this case, I can't figure out how. I can see their math. I just can't figure out the why.
Which is telling because you just complimented the initial, what we've seen so far about the initial study for the beer district. As far as like you were impressed by how thorough that was, you seem less impressed with the model of this one.
I can look through the beer district study and see all the methodology. Okay, here's the floodplains. We must respond to that. Here's the market. We must respond to that. And this one, they just said, okay, we think it would reduce economic growth by 1%. There's a 19-page summary. It never explains why 1%. And then they expect that to start immediately once the freeway is replaced with a boulevard. So every year they come up with a $560 million, air quote, cost for the project. And they never explain the how or the why that's a 1% drag. Maybe it could even be more than 1%, but they never explain the why, and they never attempt to explain the why. It's just there. And so anytime you see a report, ask yourself why or how or what might motivations be. And I would point out, because we talked, the tease for this segment was social media, things people are arguing about. If you go to Urban Milwaukee's comments, I assume WTMJ's Facebook comments, it's that 794 Boulevard is a conspiracy by commercial real estate developers. Well, it turns out the commercial real estate industry, at least one big group, has no interest in the removal option. So that's an interesting twist.
That is an interesting twist as far as... I don't know. Do you have, I mean, I know you're a reporter, but do you have strong opinions on 794 and what should happen?
I don't. I continue to want to see more and more data. And I feel like we took a really good step forward with WISDOT, even though I have some questions about some of their modeling, but there is modeling that we can all understand and look at and then poke at and try and figure out more. But I feel like there's still questions to be answered about what actually are the logistics of flowing through that area? Can the street grid handle it? And then the question from WISDOT that they raised is I-43 would be in gridlock for every rush hour. How does that happen if you're removing this ancillary freeway?
Yeah, I was in gridlock last night for the first time. It was the first time since they started construction on the stadium interchange, as because I had to go to Delafield. I feel bad for anyone who's dealing with that every day. That was not fun.
It's going to be long. 2033. Buckle up.
All right. When we come back, Jeremy and Janine will still be here. So stay with us on Point Taken. It's Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve will be back tomorrow. I'm talking to Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. And, all right, luxury tower developer hit with liens. What does that mean?
This is the shoe that I've been waiting to drop for, well, over a month now because it's November and this happened in September. The Neutral Edison Project, this privately funded 31-story luxury apartment tower on the river. Big construction start in June, big ceremony to start it. The company has even bigger plans for across the street, and it all came tumbling down even before it could start going up in September when general contractor C.D. Smith walked off the job.
And it's just sitting there.
Well, there's less of it sitting there now. We didn't talk about it last week, but the tower crane was removed from the site.
Okay. And
that would cost thousands of dollars a week to rent. So if you're not using it, like, get rid of it. But yeah, it's going to cost thousands of dollars to install it again. So it being removed is a good indicator that nothing's going to happen for a while. Well, now we have this other indicator that, yeah, things are real ugly behind the scenes. So this is about a $200 million project. Neutral, the developer out of Madison, has only built one other building. It's called Baker's Place in Madison on the east side. I believe it's near Breeze Stevens Field on East Washington Avenue. A mass timber building as well. The building is built. It's operating. People are living in it. So C.D. Smith built that building as well. They filed a $4.1 million lien for non-payment there. So that includes what they claim they weren't paid and interest. And then a flooring company, Sarigan's Flooring Coverings, also filed a $200,000 lien. Now, I thought when the tower crane came down that maybe this wasn't going to head this way because that building's property taxes previously weren't paid. But when I checked 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden they were paid. This withholding tax debt to the state was paid. So I was like, well, maybe they're getting things squared away. But no, because the biggest shoe of all drops, C.D. Smith filed a $10.2 million lien against the Milwaukee project. So that means they think they're owed $10 million for... They haven't been paid something like $8 million, and they claim now interest on their invoices for another $2 million. So that building is not coming out of the ground anytime soon.
Has there been any word from Neutral?
We got a statement right away, and C.D. Smith kind of jointly sort of signed on to it. They just they referred everyone to Neutral and said that that would be our comment, too. That blamed things like tariffs, and I question the tariffs thing because construction started in June. And if we remembered, I forget what Liberation Day
was in April.
Yeah. So you knew about the tariffs. And so if you had any concern about commodity prices spiking, and that is a huge thing in construction, you would have known about that already. So was your estimating that rose glass colored and tinted? And did C.D. Smith go along with that with you, or were they expressing concerns? I know on certain projects like the Couture, a big thing was negotiating with the general contractor, Findorff in that case, like this hard number that they both agreed, we'll pay you to build it for this price. You agree to build it for this price. That clearly isn't what happened in this situation, where there must have been some amount of design build. So now we have, quote, value engineering happening, which is a code word for making things cheaper. They were going to enclose some outdoor decks and simplify the facade a little bit. But I don't understand if any of that's actually going to happen, or if this developer is just broke.
So if the developer is just broke, what would have to go into transferring the project to a different company? Because it is, I mean, like, looking at where the initial foundation has been built by the river, like, it's prime real estate to build something there, right? So it'd be a shame to just have it sit dormant for another decade while this is caught up in legal issues. But, like, could it just be, like, transferred?
So it could, it's all privately owned, and it could be sold to another developer. Now with these liens filed against it, though, the question is, well, if you can only sell it for $4 million, is Neutral still in the hole for $6 million? And their plans are definitely worth something, that another developer could buy the plans and build the same building. We've seen that happen in Milwaukee before. It happened a couple times during the Great Recession. That's certainly an option. I don't know how that, if more liens come in and start stacking up, the desire of Neutral to actually sell the site, or if we end up with a bankruptcy court end up selling the site, or a receiver coming in selling it for them. We'll see what happens there, but we continue to watch it. It's not getting any prettier.
Yeah, okay. All right, when we come back, wheel tax. Sexy. All right, he's Jeremy Janine. I am Kristen Bry. Stay with us. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve will be back tomorrow. We're talking to Jeremy Janine, who, fun fact, you and I were at the same wedding last Friday, and I appreciated the fact that you were in the wedding, and so you still made it to the budget meeting at City Hall, and you surprised all the aldermen that you were in your tux for the wedding.
Absolutely. I didn't have time to change. So there I am at City Hall texting Brett. Brett and Leah got married. Congratulations to the two of them. That, hey, I'm going to be there, but it's going to be right at 2 because they're not done yet, and I'm going to have to step out of this meeting a little early.
All right. So besides you watching the budget hearings in a tux, what were some of the things that came out of that last week?
Not a huge change from where we were before, which is that Marina Dmitrievich's big omnibus amendment added library hours, did that pay raise for city employees, big $6 million amendment there, and a bunch of other small things, down payment assistance, right to eviction counsel. So that still went through. Peter Bergelis successfully had an amendment. We've talked about the fire truck problem, that city's not buying enough new ones, so its fleet is aging. They're literally breaking down now, as happened in a month ago. Peter Bergelis added funding, so the city had funding, Mayor Cavalier Johnson had funding to buy one. Peter Bergelis added $8 million, which will buy four more. There's the issue that just a couple of years ago, these things costed $1.5 million each. Now they're $2 million each. Well, when you got to buy 40 of them every 15 years, that $500,000 increase eats at you real quick. The one thing that happened shortly after I left, and this goes back to something that happened 2 months ago now, the mayor in his budget proposed a wheel tax increase, and he proposed a $10 increase. But to meet the state timeline to go into effect, the council had to approve the wheel tax increase before it approved the budget. It would have had to do it by essentially late October, very early November. They didn't meet that deadline, and they're like, we're blaming the mayor for this. This $250,000 delay, basically 1 month delay, is the mayor's fault. But then actually at the budget adoption meeting, instead of doing a $10 increase, they did an $11 increase and paid for the whole increase. Like, they could have voted earlier and only done a $10 increase. They delayed, so now everyone's wheel tax will go up more because they delayed. Now, in the future, that'll all even out several years from now. But in the short run, they blame the mayor and then increase the cost themselves. So that's a strange outcome.
Because now when will it go into effect?
I believe March 1st is the date.
Okay.
So they missed the February 1st cut off by missing the November date.
And then, so it's a month difference?
Yes. But instead of when you go to renew your license plates, it'll be the city share will be $41 instead of $40.
Got it. Which is interesting because I feel like that was the most recent report from Wisconsin Policy Forum, is that they just came out with something as far as more than 50%? Or what was their finding as far as how many municipalities have a wheel tax?
Let me pull it up.
I just saw the headline and I was like, oh, we've been talking about wheel tax with Jeremy lately. So it caught my eye.
I edited an article by Graham Kilmer right before coming over that Milwaukee County is considering a wheel tax next year. So that the state, and I'm kind of cribbing from Graham's article now, it legalized wheel taxes in 1967. But by 2010, only four local governments had actually used the tool. And the way you can use the tool is you can charge any amount you want, as long as you spend at least the amount raised on road construction, road repair, or transit. Now, Milwaukee's case, it's spending about $90 million on that next year, and the wheel tax is going to raise something like $12 million. So it could make the wheel tax $400 and still not meet the cap.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The wheel tax doesn't bring in a lot. But now 43% of state residents live in a community with a wheel tax. That is according.
Okay. So yeah, I was close when I said 50.
Yeah. So and it's not communities. It's 43% of residents. So Milwaukee obviously tilts that balance, Milwaukee County. But they're in communities big and small. There's actual towns that are doing it. So Wisconsin's lowest level of government, basically unincorporated. There's at least two towns that have wheel taxes now.
And I'm assuming that the finding or the cause of all of this is because we know that a lot of municipalities beyond just Milwaukee are struggling because Act 12, while helped, is not sufficient for all the different services that cities are supposed to be providing.
The Policy Forum report actually goes back even to 2005 and the decision to de-index the gas tax from inflation. So Wisconsin's gas tax used to float with inflation. Mm-hmm. Now it's just frozen at, I think, like 16 cents a gallon. And so obviously your purchasing power reduces every year. Wheel taxes actually have the same problem, where the Milwaukee County and City of Milwaukee wheel tax, since they've been adopted, their purchasing power has gone down by, this according to the Policy Forum, by $1 million per year.
Got it. All right. Let's take one more break. I just thought, yes, one more break. And then, because there's more fun happening at the lakefront. So we'll talk about two new festivals that are coming. Stick with us. This is Point Taken. A couple minutes left with Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. And why not end it on a high note with two new festivals for the city of festivals. All right, what's going on for next year and the year after?
So we've got two things announced. Freshwater Food and Wine Festival, that'll take place 2026 at the Henry Meyer Festival Grounds, the Summerfest Park, September 19th through 20th. And that's kind of threading a needle between Irish Fest, Mexican Fiesta, and as Kristen knows well, Milwaukee Oktoberfest, with her husband hosts now at the festival grounds. And then in 2027, Rock and Roll Festival is coming.
Ooh.
And these are both being put on by Wes Schaefer, who is a event promoter, bar owner, just man about town.
But also, most notably, organizer of Pride Fest.
Yes, now Pride Fest. He's been more and more involved in that in the past 5 years. And then Chef Autumn Pollock. All of a sudden, that became a tongue twister on me.
Yes.
He's co-producing the whole thing with Wes.
Oh, fun. So both events are theirs. Both are going to be at Henry Meyer Festival Grounds. And I'm guessing one has more to do, like one is going to be more high-end, like seafood, and one is rock and roll? What's kind of the pitch for both?
They talk about building on the city's reputation as this culinary hub with the Top Chef popularity. And Adam, of course, has been on lots of different cooking shows. That's the food and wine event set for this or next year now. And then in 2027, that's building the rock and roll, somehow touches on the city's automotive history as well. So I'll be interested to hear that.
All right.
More about that.
Interesting. Very cool. All right. What do y'all see you covering this week?
I am halfway through. I thought I'd have it done in time. But this policy footnotes article, which is always a fun one to write because you can tell what different council members are actually thinking about different stuff. And it ties together a lot of my reporting. So I've got that coming up. We've got a lot of other fun stuff coming up in Milwaukee that Sophie's working on. And then Graham Kilmer's doing his normal great county government coverage.
Are you going to give any teases to what the fun stuff Sophie gets to do is?
I can't because there are scoops that are coming together and I don't know when they'll be delivered.
Okay. All right. Well, we still got a minute and a half.
We got plenty of time. Let's see what else is on the list. The city is moving to crack down on unsanctioned nightclubs. There's a little bit of a legal loophole, which is that if you have an occupancy permit and have an assembly hall, essentially a permit, but part of your occupancy permit, and you're not selling alcohol directly, you can kind of host a nightclub. and that's not the intention of anyone.
Wait, say that again? So as long as you're not selling alcohol, it's just like a gathering space and you can call it a nightclub?
We were at a wedding last week. Essentially, that could turn into a nightclub. Brett and Leah, instead of inviting their friends and family, could have just charged money at the door for people to come in and handed them lots of booze. And that's happening on
time. And handed them, but not sell it.
Correct. They could charge us money in different ways than the selling the alcohol, which could skirt around some of the tavern regulations.
Oh.
Which is that the tavern regulations are where these things normally get shut down. So now the city is writing some new ordinances, updating ordinances to try and tackle this problem.
Is it like a pretty prevalent issue?
With one person who, it's my understanding that the landlord has even taken to boarding up the door at this point to try and keep this nightclub from reforming. That there's just this loophole that this person keeps doing it because the venue owner is allowing him, but the landlord doesn't want it.
Oh, interesting. We should have gotten into that deeper. Maybe we'll talk about it more next week.
It's coming still. It's coming.
All right. All right. Jeremy, Janine, as always, thank you for your great reporting. Thank you for spending time with us. Steve will be back tomorrow. We'll be just Steve and I. Joe and Bill have the day off. But I hope you have a great day.